Welcome to the NSCHBC Edge Podcast, leading the way in the business of medicine. Now here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NSCHBC Edge Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Fletcher. The Edge Podcast is brought to you today by the National Society of Certified Healthcare Business Consultants. Our goal is to discuss healthy business principles, have conversations on the business side of medicine, so that you and your practice can thrive and be profitable and successful for years to come. As many of you know, the NSCHBC is a proactive organization with over 300 members, including legacy members that share their wealth of knowledge and expertise with each other, whether it be in the legal field, the accounting field, the revenue cycle management field, the business management field, value-based care, and more. We have every kind of consultant that focuses on the healthcare industry you could want. So for this episode, I'm actually excited for this episode because it's something we haven't talked about in a while. And I'm happy to welcome NSCHBC member and fellow healthcare consultant, Anthony Werner. Anthony, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Terry. I appreciate you having me today. And please call me Tony.
Okay, Tony, yay. So, and I appreciate you coming on with such short notice. We were going to have you later in the year, but we had some scheduling issues. So thank you again for being here. We appreciate that. So I know that you sent something out to our listserv that we have with the NSCHBC, and I read through it quickly, and then I went, oh, wait, I want to take some time with this because it was such an important document, and we appreciate you for just articulating this information on payer negotiations and interoperability, which I'm assuming means working together and trying to get everybody on the same page. And as I'm reading it, and it was very not just thoughtful, but also detail-oriented, and I just love the language in there. I really like to have a conversation about some of it because I think that's probably a tough thing for many practices, whether they be large that have their own, you know, in-house people who negotiate contracts versus subbing it out versus those small providers who have to figure it out on the fly. And how to just have an open dialogue for payer contract negotiations. So let me ask you this. When you're approaching a client, whether it be big or small, how do you start that conversation with the payers?
Well, Terry, thank you. Usually when we're talking with the payers, we're starting the conversation because there's been a communication from the payer that the current contract is up for renewal. Or if it's an evergreen contract, the client has indicated they wanted to try to negotiate with the payer in most cases to receive higher reimbursement rates. Starting to have that conversation, the biggest thing I'm finding in 2023 and 2024 is just being able to get somebody to talk to you. So it's really the art of being able to get a hold of a payer rep that is willing to talk with you about your payer contracts. And many times that requires a letter from the practice leadership to the payer indicating that the contract is up for renewal and you'd like to have a conversation with them and would like to be contacted. Again, most of payer contracting or payer negotiations is just that determination and that perseverance to make sure that you're getting somebody there.
So is that part of what you do in your consulting work, that you find that person that they need to be in contact with, and then you're basically that assistant negotiator to help, you know, bridge the gap?
Many times I find that yes, we have to help them find the right person or send the right letter to get that person. I think most of our consultants that are part of our membership have good relationships and good contacts with payers. So I've actually found that talking to other members, many times you can find somebody to talk to with each of the payers that you may not have in your contact list.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. And the other thing I've noticed, and you brought up a really good point, just finding that person to talk to at the payer is almost the biggest challenge than the conversation itself.
Sometimes it can be the biggest challenge, because if you don't have the ability to talk to anybody, you don't have the ability to do anything. And I've seen practices that have resorted to sending to try to get somebody to talk to him, having to resort to a termination letter saying that they were going to terminate the contract. If nobody calls them, the payers take it and go, okay, fine, we'll term you. And then you're trying to fight to get back in network. So I would never recommend that the way to force or try to get a contact would be through that termination letter.
Through threatening termination, right. And then making sure that you have somebody that can actually negotiate you with you. I notice that sometimes in contract negotiations I've been involved with for my clients, we get somebody and then we find out they really don't have any kind of authority to negotiate with us. They're kind of like a middleman, if you will, you know, just saying you need to keep it as it is. And we look through the contract and the reason we're trying to go negotiate, I mean, perfect example, the pandemic. There is a lot, there are a lot of talking heads out there and experts in the healthcare field that feel that there's a potential for a second one. Now that we've had one, now that we know what it looks like. And a lot of people lost a lot of revenue in that because it was based on, you know, services and value-added services. And if patients can't come into your practice, how do you, you know, how do you negotiate that kind of, those kinds of terms within the contract? Have you found that those discussions to be a part of what you're doing?
Yeah. And like you mentioned, Terry, the pandemic, but there's also that effort to move things from fee-for-service to value-based. So a lot of what I've been trying to make sure that we have those conversations with the payers is around how can we, for our practice, for our clients, how can we get and take advantage of some of that value-based payment? Or how do we look at what is the, I call it the practice value proposition on what we bring to that payer, what we bring to the employers, what we bring to the members and patients that we serve.
And you brought up a good point because one of the sticklers I have with value-based care is I don't always see where it's good for the provider. It may be good for the patient because they have, it's kind of like going to Costco. You can get everything at one place or, you know, shopping on Amazon, but is it really good for the provider when it comes to, and we have to look at that. That's what we do, you know, is and a lot with the patient. Is it good for both sides as far as what you get? But moving on and talking about some of the things that you wrote in your paper, which again was just fantastic. When you're talking about these contract negotiations, who should participate in these discussions? Some practices don't have, you know, a team to do that, don't have a legal team. They do need to outsource it, or they have a provider that just doesn't have the time, or an office manager that could be a spouse that, you know, not to discount spouses working in their offices, but, you know, just somebody that doesn't understand it. You know, somebody that maybe they just have one employee that's a front desk and a biller. What do you do there?
Good question there. And, you know, we all know that in most of our practices, the most expensive resource we have are those providers, those physicians that are in the practice or the other providers in the practice. So we want to keep the time that they have to spend on something like this to where it's beneficial and fruitful for them. That being said, we usually find the most impact when we do have one of the physicians involved with those conversations. And since it, revenues are the lifeblood of the practice, it's important to have them involved. Typically, what I find is if the clinic is small and they don't have anybody that understands the discussions that need to be had with payers or how to prep for those discussions, that it's good to use somebody that has that experience, an outside resource or something like that. Most of the time when I've talked with individuals, the return on investment of using an outside resource when you don't have the skills inside is, you know, in the several 100% return on investment for those in typical cases.
Well, and that's why we have a job as consultants, because people would definitely need somebody that has that subject matter expertise to do that. You and I were talking offline a little bit when it comes to, you know, not just the cost of doing it, but the cost of not doing it. So, you know, we have a lot of providers, a lot of physicians, and a lot of people that listen into our podcast. And can you just speak a little bit about, you know, not negotiating with payers and just forgetting that you signed a contract way back when and not realizing that fee schedules have changed, inflation has changed, staffing has changed, you know, shortages have changed, and you need to make sure they're updated.
Sure, Terry. And just quickly for those that haven't seen the document that I sent out was specific to things around administrative transactions, reducing waste and reducing administrative burden for practices, or the digital health information technology interoperability, the sharing of data back and forth as we're looking at things. And so we'll come back to that. But to me, I find that a lot of times I'll work with a client that hasn't really put a lot of emphasis on payer negotiations. So they've got, you know, I'll ask and say, hey, when was the last time you talked to Blue Cross? And can I get a copy of your contract to review what you have in there and see if there's any clauses that could harm you or where we're getting paid? And many times, I'm not going to say a majority, but many times they can't even give me their fee schedule on what they're supposed to be getting paid. And in most cases, I would say a lot of these that haven't put payer contracting as an emphasis, they may have a contract that the only language that they have is from, you know, a contract from back in 2009. I looked at a contract a couple of weeks ago where it was still from in the 1990s. It was a 1999 contract.
Oh, no.
Obviously, lots of things have changed since then.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I see the same thing. Just so you know, you're not alone.
So I think that with a lot of small practices, many times there's a feeling of helplessness that the payer says, you know, we're not even going to negotiate with you, take it or leave it, or you're out of the network. That's part of that discussion is to not necessarily just accept that the payer is going to kick you out of network. It's you have a legal right to be able to talk about those contracts, and you have to push a little bit. You have to be able to take a little bit of risk. To be able to have those discussions. And if you don't, what you're going to find is that you're just going to continue to drop behind the market, that others are going to continue to get increases where yours stays the same. And pretty soon you're way below the market and trying to get a 15 or 20% increase to bring you just up to market becomes almost an impossible task.
Yeah. And there was another thing that I noticed too. And this is one of the things that, and I keep, referencing the paper. And for those of you out there, if you join the NSCHBC, you'll basically have options to have this kind of information because our consultants sent it out. They're just so generous when it comes to that. You mentioned something that I think some people miss when it comes to contract payer negotiation. You know, we've been talking about fee schedules and making sure those are updated, but there's other things within contracts that I think people miss. And one of the biggest things is prior authorizations and how those work and, you know, appealing claims and how that works and how long you have to file your claim and things like that. So have you found, as far as providing some of this language that payers are open to those discussions that aren't necessarily directly related to the fee schedule?
Well, Terry, you and I both know that over time, the payers are in it for the long term. So what they're going to be looking at is they're looking to incorporate language that maybe isn't going to benefit them this year, but it might benefit them in the following year or the year after that or 10 years down the line. So there's language in there that may look like there's no issues with it, but realistically, the combination of different paragraphs in there, they may include something that limits a price increase. And you might say, well, we're getting paid well above our prices. We don't have to worry about that. But there might be another clause in there that says we're going to pay you the lesser of either your contracted rate or 70% of your charges. You go down the line a few years, and if you aren't getting increases and you can only increase your charges by a certain percentage, I've seen somewhere that language says you can't increase your charges. It's just a 0% increase in your charges. I'd never accept that. That's the type of language, but it's in there and people don't even watch for it. Or probably the most common I'm seeing now is that you're limited to a 1% price increase. The problem is you may have 25 payers that don't limit you, but one that does limit you. And so you can only increase your prices by 1% because you have to keep those prices the same for all payers. So problematic language with one payer can cascade over into problems with multiple different payers.
Well, and I've also seen, you know, I'm based in California and we have a California workers' comp fee schedule. And so work comp, we call that the different animal. But what people don't know is that some of the commercial plans have purchased the contracts for these for this payer. So not only are you getting a reduction in your contract provider rate on the California fee schedule, but then you have to take another reduction if you participate in that for that payer, if you're not careful with the language. You know, I negotiated a contract saying if we're taking one reduction, we're not taking the other, pick one. And luckily that, you know, that went through for that payer. And so I think you're bringing up a good point that things are buried in language. If you don't have somebody that can find those things, if you don't have a legal team, and again, I'm talking to our listeners, if you don't have somebody that's a subject matter expert on these things to really fine tooth comb that language, you could be, you know, giving your life away there when it comes to the future of your contracts. And, you know, one of the things I was also reminded of is with the No Surprises Act, it's hard to get on a panel now. We've been talking about negotiating an existing contract. What are you finding as far as getting on, you know, a panel at all and getting into a contract? If you've opened an ASC or now you have an office-based lab or a physical therapy center, you know, just something different that you weren't on there before.
Yeah, Terry, that's a big subject. We could talk about that.
I know, forever,
two more,
right?
Sessions. Yes. So I think there's things in there that I am seeing significant difficulty for trying to open up new services, especially if it's like, for example, a procedural practice or a surgical practice that's trying to do either an ASC, an ambulatory surgery center, or in-office procedures, and, you know, trying to get the payer to pay them above just the professional fee for an in-office procedure, those type of things. And it is becoming much and more difficult to do so. I think the leverage that you have with those is almost always the private practices are going to be cheaper than the same thing being done in a hospital setting or with some of the larger systems as you're looking at it. So there is leverage there that you can use, but it's becoming more and more difficult because sometimes other providers are trying to lock you out of that network. Another thing that I see with organizations is that they create these narrow networks and they limit who can get into those narrow networks, and can be very difficult to get into the narrow networks or the smaller networks.
Yeah, I see that as well. And, you know, and just to kind of wrap all this up, one of the things that I think people miss too, and I'd love your feedback on this, and I'd kind of noticed it within your white paper, is that I think everyone thinks that every contract has to go by CMS. And, you know, Medicare is its own entity. And so there's Medicare and everyone else. And well, if you really want to be technical, Medicare, Medicaid, work comp, and then everyone else, which is the commercial plans. But you do have to, if you're a commercial plan, and I think some people miss this, you do have to follow ONC and HHS and, you know, Office of Civil Rights. There are policies governmental that actually do cross over into commercial plans. Also what your state allows. I was on a podcast this morning that was talking about Incident 2, which is a Medicare rule, but because Florida, for example, doesn't allow for nurse practitioners to supervise staff, that it would negate the federal CMS rule versus what the state allows. And I think that sometimes when you're negotiating policies, people miss what their state allows for them or certain, you know, HHS things, and they don't incorporate that into their contracts, and the commercial plans either ignore it or don't think it applies to them. Have you run into that at all?
I have. And one of the biggest things, Terry, when we were talking about language in there, one of the things that I see that is becoming a major, even more problematic than it has in the past, is most commercial plans in these days offer Medicare Advantage or Medicaid Advantage or both. And a lot of times in the commercial contracts, there's language in there that says, if you accept our commercial contracts, our PPOs, our HMOs, and those, you have to accept our Medicare Advantage or Medicaid Advantage plans. And where I see those being problematic right now in many cases is you have to accept it, but they're not even offering many places, California being one, Terry, I'm sure you see it all the time, that the payers, the commercial payers for their Medicare Advantage plans do not even offer what Medicare would pay for the same service.
Yeah, they offer so, the service itself, but not the Medicare fee schedule. I agree.
And so part of that is that you have to be aware that your contract for that commercial may not be just one product. It might be multiple different products, including different networks, different coverage things, and a mix of both self-insured by an employer and in the Medicare, Medicaid Advantage plans that are in there too. And you have to stay on top of all of those. So if you're talking to a payer and they have a Medicare Advantage plan, you need to be looking at those contracts and those terms for those Medicare Advantage plans, as well as the commercial plans during that same discussion.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%. Well, I know we could talk about this all day and dive into this for hours and hours, but I think this is a really good discussion to get our listeners started. And for mm-hmm. those of you that would like to contact Tony and find out, you know, more about what he does and what he could offer you with regard to contract negotiations or find the right person for you, you can go to our NSCHBC website at nschbc.org and click on Find a Consultant, type in his first name, which is Anthony. I typed it myself, Werner, W-E-R-N-E-R, and his information will appear and how to contact him, and I'm sure you'll appreciate everything he can offer. So thank you today for being a guest with us.
You're very welcome, Terry, and thank you very much, and I hope that our members out there will go out and look at the suggested language that I sent out relating to administrative burden and administrative transactions.
Yeah, me too. Also, as a reminder, the nschbc.org website offers monthly free webinars on a variety of topics, as well as a quarterly Medicare regulatory update. Please go to nschbc.org and click on the tab Upcoming Education. We have a variety of topics for 2024 that you don't want to miss. That's it for us today, everyone. Make it a great day, a great rest of your month, and thank you for listening to the award-winning NSCHBC Edge podcast. I'm your host, Terry Fletcher.
Thank you for listening to the NSCHBC Edge podcast. Join us on the second Tuesday of each month as our consultants tackle the complexities of navigating the business of medicine. You can reach us on the web at nschbc.org, the National Society of Certified Healthcare Business Consultants.